This is the Passing for Normal podcast. I'm Jared.
And I'm Colleen. We're going to share our stories of life, death, grief, and everything in between, all through a colorful lens and a unique sense of humor. Welcome to our introduction episode. We're going to talk about why we're doing this and who we are. So just jump in to the deep end because that's all I know how to do. We're Jared and Colleen. We have been married for almost 25 years. And we have two daughters. Our oldest, Claire, would have been 18 right now, but she passed away 3 years ago. And that's been quite a process that's been very different for both of us. But I think we're both in a really good space now. And so we wanted to take the opportunity that we have now that we have the capacity to do this. Claire was diagnosed with Rett syndrome when she was 2. And when that happened, we found a community of other people who were living with Rett syndrome. And what that did was so profound. Seeing other people who had stories that were similar to ours was just, I mean, Jared, I don't know how you feel, but it was a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, it helped us feel like we weren't alone in that community. It gave us a new kind of, family, I guess you could say. And yeah, it just helped knowing we weren't alone.
Yeah, and I think with child loss, you don't get to create family over this because it's a very, like, the absolute nature of grief is that you're not connecting. Like, I don't want to make new friends.
Well, and I think like for this, in our situation, I think it was really isolating because you're no longer really part of the special needs community anymore, but you're not also part of the typical community and you haven't been for a while.
Right.
So you've kind of then lost your two kind of community islands, let's say, yeah. In that.
Right. And so we thought there's not a lot of people talking about what it's like to live 3 years after their child dies. But I know there's a bunch of you out there. And I know that to all the people, like I know a lot of people who have lost children just because you kind of meet those people once, I don't know, they just sort of seem to, I don't want to say like you meet, I don't know, it's like a club sort of thing that like Fight Club almost, like where maybe you don't talk about it, but you know, and then there's like a thing. What was I saying? Sorry, guys. I lose my, so because our daughter died, I lose track of my thoughts a lot, which is part of why Jared's helping me. What was I saying?
Yeah, you were talking about loss of community. Oh. And yeah, and then I had talked about how isolating it is.
Yeah, so it's isolating. My brain doesn't work great. But we're wanting to do this to give a voice so that as other people join this really terrible club, there is someone out there who's rambling about this sort of stuff. You know, there's not a lot of representation in media, just in general. I think, like in movies, it's often portrayed like a death, like the immediate sort of horror of it. But society sort of expects you to kind of like move on. And I don't know.
I think like, I think there's two things. Society, when it's the death of a child, it feels like society kind of expects you to fall apart.
Yep.
And in the media and movies, there has been more of a trend, let's say, it seems, toward stories about grief.
For sure.
And portraying that in a narrative, which is good, and good that it's being out there and discussed. But yeah.
Yeah, but there's just, I don't know, I feel like I don't feel like the market's oversaturated. Also, we're not trying to make money on this. Like, I'm not sophisticated enough to even, where this is just sort of like an art project for us to, I don't know, maybe we'll process, maybe we'll connect with people. We really are just trying to hopefully make it a little bit easier for someone else. So maybe you're listening and you have a child with special needs and you're sort of curious about like what, like how do they do it? I know I personally lived in fear, like extensive fear. I had to like do EMDR and things around that of our daughter dying when she was alive. So to those people that are maybe curious, I hope that maybe listening to our stories can help you prepare. Even if it doesn't happen to you, maybe it'll give you a little bit of peace. Maybe you have friends who have special needs children. Maybe you have friends who have lost a child. There's so many different kinds of people out there. If anyone could learn something from our discussions, I think it's worth sharing our perspective. And we have a kind of crazy life. I mean, because I am crazy, Jared is not. Jared is absolutely the rational one in this. So that's why we're doing this. Now we'll back up and we'll kind of explain why is our life so crazy, right? Well, obviously our daughter died 3 years ago. That was like a major pivot point toward chaos. But when she passed, like you had said, Jared, I was not rejected, but like I didn't quite fit in with the special needs mom community anymore. And we didn't fit in at all. Like you think you don't fit in as a special needs parent within the typical world, right? Like,
yeah.
When Claire was a freshman in high school, that was so hard. Like all the other parents were like doing the freshman stuff and we were just like on another planet. And so when she passed away, I just didn't want to be near anybody that had children. Like I literally couldn't see school buses. Like, 'cause she took a school bus to school. Like that was just so profoundly devastating. Like I didn't want to be around anyone who had kids. Like I didn't want to be at a restaurant where there was a family with two daughters. And so she passed away in February of 2021 when there was still some like COVID vibes going. I feel like the vaccine had just started to be a thing. So there was still a lot of work from home. And so I hated where we lived at the time. We had been talking about maybe once Claire had graduated high school, what our next options would be. We had been thinking through what kind of a place would be an improvement from where we were. We had sort of decided we wanted to live in a town where you could walk to an independent bookshop and a small movie theater.
Yep.
We wanted to be in a college town.
Yeah, university town.
And in hopes that maybe it would be easier to hire caregivers for Claire.
Yeah.
So we had already been thinking about not living where we were because we didn't love it there. We were there for a job, a great job.
Which, where we were, was in Southern California.
Yeah, it's not a bad place to be.
No.
It was flat. There was lots of handicap parking. We had a house with no stairs. So there was lots of reasons why life was working great, but it really worked great with Claire. And then without her, it didn't. And I know they say you shouldn't make any big decisions after a big loss, which, I mean, that makes sense.
It definitely is sound advice.
But what we decided to do was sell our house and move up into like a little tiny community in Northern California.
Foothills of the Sierra Nevadas.
Yeah, there was not a lot of children there. It was like a retirement community, kind of. Yeah.
I think it's also worth mentioning the other context is that she did pass in our home.
That's true.
And it's not like she was in a hospital or anything. She had actually passed in our home. So there was an element of us wanting to change that environment.
Yeah. I couldn't get out of there fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, it was not the home that we had, like, the most amount of nice memories with her.
Right.
Like, we had only lived in that home for, I think, 4 years. And those were 4 very hard years.
Yep.
I mean, it was awesome that we had that house during COVID. Because we could all be together and be apart. It worked for a lot of reasons.
But it functioned as really well.
Without Claire, none of it made sense. And so so we blew her life and decided to move up to Northern California because at the time Jared was working remotely. As with many companies, that wasn't like a permanent situation, which kind of created some other discussion opportunities. And one thing led to another. And his company had an opportunity that involved us moving to Austria for just over a year and then down to Australia because COVID, we couldn't move straight to Australia because Australia and COVID. I feel like that's self-explanatory. It's amazing, though, how much I forget. I'm like, why did we do that? But we literally couldn't ship anything.
Right. And we couldn't get visas for Australia. And we
couldn't get visas for us for Australia because of COVID.
And there was still an opportunity in Austria.
For work.
For work for me. So.
Yeah. So we had this like really bizarre. We had talked about, like I said, how I had thought a lot about. I was always very worried about Claire dying. I don't want to say like I was always worried about it, but you know, it's the kind of thing where you hear like a song on the radio and you're like, that'd be a good one for her funeral. Like, and those thoughts were so pervasive. Like, they didn't rule my life, but they were around.
No, but you like, it was always that concept of anticipatory grief.
Yeah.
You've kind of talked about in other venues. And that's a real thing. And that's something I think we always held Claire loosely, we say.
Yes.
Because we knew that was a very realistic possibility. Now, that didn't limit us
from living life. It was also possible that she lived to be 40.
Absolutely. So that's why we lived with, and we try to provide her with as an enriched life as possible, regardless of what happened, which is really what everyone should be doing for themselves and for their children and their families anyway.
Sure. And honestly, I'm so thankful that we had talked about those things.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like when the day happened, we knew who to call. We knew what steps we needed to take. It was really important to me that we donated her brain to research, which is something you gotta move fast to be able to do that. And we were able to. And the other thing was that we had talked about wanting to travel Europe. Like, it was always this thing that we had kind of said, like, if anything ever happens, I could see us spending a good amount of time traveling Europe. Like, that would be something that we would like to do. Because our life with Claire was awesome, but complicated. And it meant no big trips. You traveled for work to Europe.
Yep.
And you loved it.
I did.
And I heard about how great it was. But in my world, there was a very real version of my life where I never got to Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had like a very unique opportunity where that opportunity came up for us to go to Europe and to live there. And we jumped at it.
Yeah.
And we just said, yes, we thought about it for probably 30 seconds.
Maybe 15.
We were like, yep, that's what Claire would want us to do. That's what we want to do. That feels right. Is there an element of we were just running from our life and our
Absolutely.
Grief?
Absolutely.
For sure. But.
Yeah, but if your child dies in your home and then you have nightmares about that, running from that makes all sorts of sense.
Well, we were also running with intention.
For sure.
We weren't running just blindly.
Well, you were such like an amazing dad. You for sure were not on like the career path. Like, I mean, I say that sounds wrong. You were like well employed.
My focus wasn't climbing the corporate ladder.
Right. Let's say. You were always home for dinner.
Yeah.
And so when this opportunity came up for you to focus on your career, absolutely. Like, it was like a thing for us to hold on to. Yep. It was like the only part of our life that didn't feel like it needed to be burned down.
Right. It was like we had to incorporating another massive change somehow helped offset the change of Claire being gone.
I feel
somehow.
Like we were working in reality. We were working in the realness that our life had been rocked. Like, right. To me, not selling our house and just been like, okay, well, I'll go to the grocery store and I'll get the groceries, like that, to me, would have been like a disproportionate response to our daughter dying.
Just going back into normalcy.
Yeah. Like, how would we, like, there's nothing's normal. Claire's gone.
Right.
So, like, yeah, like, we had to rebuild. Like, even if we hadn't sold the house, if we hadn't changed everything, we still would have been rebuilding from zero without Claire. Like, we had to learn a new life.
You know, and I think also some important context, maybe, you know, we didn't have family that lived close by in terms of a support network for us. We didn't have family that lived close by. We didn't have a lot of friends that lived close by. We had caretakers that were hired from the state. So it was a very easy decision for us to just pick up everything and leave.
For sure. And I don't mean to suggest, like, I know we have other really good friends, sadly enough, who lived fairly close and their daughter passed away recently and they're not blowing up their life moving out of the country. They feel really thankful that they are able to stay in their home. Their circumstances were a little different and they are leaning in on their community. So, I mean, it's definitely like the kind of thing where everyone has to find their own path
forward. Yeah, absolutely.
This was just ours. And so it was like I had to learn German. Like, I literally had to pass a German exam in order to get our visa to move to Austria. Jared didn't have to learn German because he's smart and well-employed. But as the trailing spouse...
Technical term.
That is a technical term. I had to, but it was so nice to have something to think about because, like, I couldn't just cry all the time. Like, I mean, well, I could.
Well, and I mean, we spent a solid 9 months
crying all the time.
Crying all the time.
And healing our nervous systems. We felt like most immediately after she was gone, it was like we needed to do everything we could just to like get the very real trauma out of our bodies because we wanted to keep living.
Well, and I think we had a good understanding about the stress response and trauma response in the body itself, because we had already been kind of thinking about, even when Claire was alive, everyday life had its traumas. The seizures, the turning blue, the stopping breathing, the going in at night to see if she was still breathing. Like, so there was already trauma, and we had already been kind of attuned to the scientific facts of how your body stores trauma and stress. And we were trying to work through those things. So when that happened, we knew immediately that we had to put in some very like real strategies on how to move the trauma through our body.
Yeah. How many miles did you pedal that year?
1,000. I rode my bicycle 1,000 miles that year. It was just get out and pedal.
And I think it was like in 10 months.
Yeah.
Because that was from, like, February, and I think we shipped the bikes in November. Maybe it was 9 months.
No, I mean, I had started riding, it was probably 12 months, but it was, most of that for sure was after that.
Yeah.
But like that was, we knew that's what we needed to do. So when we left Southern California, it was very much like with the intention of going somewhere where we could at least start to heal our nervous systems.
Yes.
From the shock and the trauma.
Yeah.
Of
and
that.
In the 15 years of trauma of I was diagnosed with CPTSD while she was alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was struggling just with our great life as it was. Yep. So, yeah. So we spent a good solid year healing our nervous systems, or 10 months. And then we moved to Austria, which was so much better for us than any of us expected. Man, there is something about the opportunity to do something hard. And then when you overcome it and you do it and it feels like life, because I feel like, you know, if you don't manage to keep your child alive, especially as a, when your role in life is a caregiver, you feel pretty worthless to society and like inept, at least I did. But like figuring out German, like figuring out how to use the ATM when we figured out how to get cash out of our checking account. That was amazing. When we figured out how to work the grocery store situation, like there was a few things. That was a real rich experience. And then also culturally, it was really incredible just to learn a different culture. And it was, for me, easier. Like, it was so different that I didn't feel like it. I don't know what, Jared, maybe you can help me with words, but there was like something about being like in a German speaking, like being Americans in a German speaking culture. I feel like we were singled out for being American more than we were singled out for our daughter being dead.
Yeah. There was an element of comfortable anonymity.
Yeah, but it was there. The thing that defined us wasn't that Claire had died. The thing that defined us, when I was crying in the grocery store, people just assumed it's because I didn't speak German.
Right. Yeah. We were just the weird Americans in rural Upper Austria.
Right. And there was like something really nice about that. And then. So we had this year of just magic and traveling. Oh my gosh, we got our younger daughter, Chloe, is 14 now. So she was 13 the year that we lived there. Am I doing that math right? Or was she 12? She was somewhere in that age. And we got to travel and do the most incredible things with her. We went to Paris. She was obsessed with Greek mythology, so I was able to take her to Athens. And we saw friends in Barcelona. We went to London and saw friends.
France, Portugal.
Yeah. We just did a lot. And it was really fun. And we showed her that we were keeping living. Like, we put one foot in front of the other and we did fun things with her. Like, she found some Cirque du Soleil show that she wanted to see in Barcelona on her birthday. And we had friends in Barcelona. So we went and did that. And we, because Claire was always like, because we never knew when Claire would die, we like lived really big. And so it felt like really big, like, well, okay, Chloe, you're still alive. So we're going to live really big for you and for me and for Dad. And so we continued and had this magical year in Austria that was incredibly healing.
Yeah. And I mean, like when Claire was alive, Chloe always kind of had to come second.
Yeah.
To whatever Claire needed at that time.
So it was like a makeup year.
It was kind of a makeup year. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, I don't want to say guilt, but you know, like, sorry, your life was so crazy for so long. And then your sister died in the room next to you. So that got awkward. But here, let's travel Europe.
Right.
It's not what happened, but it's sort of what happened.
It's sort of what happened. But we used it intentionally to really try to pour focus, love and attention on
and make Chloe memories
and make memories with her.
Yeah, like the thought of making memories with Claire hurt real bad, but making memories with Chloe felt real good. Mm-hmm. And so Europe somehow made that balance work.
Yep.
Then we moved to Australia, And this has been more challenging than I would have ever imagined.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot why we left California and we moved back into suburbia. And all of a sudden, now there's families and we're back to sitting at restaurants where there's two little girls at the table. And we have done a lot of processing over the last year. We've been in Australia now.
Just over a year.
And it has been like...
This has been us settling back into normal life. Like, we basically freaked out for 2 years.
It was awesome. Right?
And we left Southern California, and then we moved to Europe, and we did that. And coming back and coming to Australia was kind of us settling back down into, okay, quote unquote, normal life.
Right.
Right? And us just living in suburbia, me going to the office 9 to 5, and Chloe going to school, and just regular, that typical life pattern.
I just walk to the cafe and have coffee every day. Yeah, like real.
Yep.
I went to the gym twice a week for a while.
And that's why it's been super challenging, I think, because it's been...
This is the thing I never wanted to do without Claire.
Right. We haven't been in normal life since she was alive.
Yeah.
And then it was coming here and doing that. Oh, and it's in a different country. And they speak the language, but also not really.
German. It was easier to learn German, or because you could translate. You can translate German to English. You cannot translate Aussie to English.
Well, and I think like when we moved to Austria, like you expect it to be different because it's a different language, different culture, everything.
You brace for it.
Moving to Australia, Australia's like kind of like California in the 90s, we like to say. It's like where we live in Sydney. It's beach culture. It's kind of that casual ocean vibe culture. But it's very different than California.
I do not want this podcast to be about how much I hate Australia. So we're gonna go light on that topic for now. We're making big strides toward making peace with the culture here, and
but suffice it to say, it was actually more of a challenge to move to Australia than it was to Austria.
Yeah.
In terms of settling in.
Yeah. And so now we've been here for a year. We have a few more years here and we're back into normal life, but it's not quite normal, right? Like, I can be sitting in that cafe at the cafe and a song comes on that was one of Claire's favorites, and man, it hits different. And you look around and it feels like everyone else is just like living their best life, and then you're just like sitting there writhing in pain. But the fact of the matter is, at that same cafe, I know that one of the employees has recently lost his son to cancer.
Right.
And there's another lady that comes in with her child that is obviously in like chemotherapy, like fighting some sort of battle that I don't know about. But I know enough. I've spent enough time with Claire, would get infusions in the cancer treatment center at the Children's Hospital in San Diego. So like I have a little bit of perspective on some of what is involved in the horrors of that. And so when you see this child who's bald and has a feeding tube in their nose and whatever, you know, like there's an awareness that I have, like their life isn't easy.
Well, and I think that's kind of the most normal thing, is that everyone kind of appears to be normal.
Nobody is.
But nobody is. Everyone's got things going on in the background that you have no idea about, that they're just trying to get through another day, and that is normal life.
Right.
That is normal life.
Divorce, your parent just died.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everyone's got stuff going on. And then we just are all out there pretending like we're fine, which is great.
I mean, to an extent, you have to fake it till you make it a
absolutely.
Little bit.
And I mean, man, there is nothing better when you are feeling isolated and when it hurts, and then you get to connect with other people who are in it. It doesn't even have to be the same thing, yeah. You know? But there's like an old man who also sits at the coffee shop alone a lot of the time, and we've kind of now, when we cross paths on the street walking there, like stop and chat with each other, right? Because like we both go for coffee alone every day, but like now we see each other on the street.
Yeah.
And there's like something about that. Like obviously I'm not the only person having coffee alone. He's not the only person having coffee alone. And so I think that kind of like, to wrap this up, I feel like we've rambled a bit longer than we were expecting. That's why we're doing this, is we have a kind of interesting perspective on life. It's of like a fairly boring, normal life, right? We're a family of three living as expats in Sydney. Like, how freaking privileged is that? It's amazing. But all of this is happening in light of our daughter being dead and me freaking out pretty significantly about that. just the facts. So anyway, we hope that this podcast might make you laugh, make you think, make you feel seen. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen. Jared, do you have any like closing thoughts?
No, thanks for listening to us ramble. I think it helps us also to talk about it.
Yep.
So selfishly, that's as much my reason for doing it, is to just talking about it and putting it out there helps us also as we continue on this path.
Right.
It, because we're not like at any kind of finish line, like there is no finish line. We're still on the path and still struggle day in and day out. So this is part of our healing journey too.
Absolutely. And I just like, I feel like it's more acceptable for moms to talk about this. So mad props to you, sir, for joining me in this very public discussion about my crazy, our crazy. Thank you for your time. I hope you have a great day.